Órale, bienvenidos to the Familia FFB podcast. This is Jorge Martin, and we're joined again by good friend and avid fantasy player, Jordan Bohink, for another deep dive into the rookies. This time, we're going to concentrate on the wide receivers, los receptores. Jordan, you were talking about the fact that so many receivers, this was an incredibly talented class, and you really took a lot of time to really drill down into these receivers because of the tell me a little bit about that, how you were talking about how this was a position of need for your dynasty.
Yeah. So in my dynasty league this year, in the startup draft, I went young at running back, and I went and tried to go get those guys that I might be able to count on for a few years. But I went and got veterans and actually ended up getting some values were at wide receiver and quarterback. Quarterbacks are very hard to get out of the draft, and they're very few, as we talked about earlier.
Right.
So it's hard to kind of like fix that through the draft in 1 year, unless you're the number one overall pick. It can take someone like Burrow. So I felt like I really wanted to try and focus on wide receiver and see if I could invest heavily in wide receiver, make some smart bets, and if I could come away with one or two wins, then I'd be in a good spot. Because I had Julio Jones, AJ Green on my supposed to be my top two guys, and that wasn't going to hold up, you know, beyond this year or the next year. So I knew I had to get younger at some point, and this was my year to do it. I felt this has been this was widely considered a very, very strong wide receiver class, in what was considered maybe one of the strongest draft classes of all time. And this is arguably the best wide receiver class, at least pre-draft, as far as everyone's concerned. That's how we feel. We'll see what it looks like, you know, in 5 or 10 years. But something I'm really excited to talk about, because I spent a lot of time and I looked at a lot of these guys, and honestly, guys that I think some of them have the potential to come in and just be impact players from day one.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, let's start with the fastest guy out of a very fast class, Henry Ruggs out of Alabama. Went number 12 to the Raiders. Where did you have him? I mean, obviously the Raiders love their burners.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to get a little burned on this one, but I did not even have Henry Ruggs in my top five as the wide receiver. I was surprised he went number one overall, and we'll get to it. And the next two guys on our conversation today are part of the reason why I was surprised. But Henry, he's a good player. I'm always concerned about the guy who runs the super fast 40 who gets drafted in the first round, especially when that happens to be drafted by the Raiders, because how many Darius Hayward Bay situations do we need to see and not work out before we realize that drafting the fastest guy on the field is not the fastest, does not translate. But I will say this, he is a guy that, despite being a bit shorter in stature and only being under 200 pounds, he is a pretty tough guy to take down. He doesn't really just seem to just like flop. You know, he doesn't just seem to be one of those wide receivers who just goes down. He seems to fight for yards. I'd be concerned over time about maybe some injury history, but he's a guy, and something else that I saw that drove his grade down for me was two things. One, for as talented as he is and as talented as his team was, I actually felt like he under-delivered on his production at Alabama. I feel like he probably could have had some even more impressive stats. Now, you could argue he had to split those targets with other people. That's totally fair. But winning the games in the way that they were, the amount of time they spent on offense, I would have expected him to maybe produce a little bit of a higher level. The other things that I knocked him on were his route running ability. I'm going to name a lot of things here, but his route running ability, his injury history, and then his vertical game. And vertical game is sort of that thing that's really popular in the NFL, that idea of like, I'm going to put the ball up and he's going to go and get it. I didn't see him make those kind of plays. I don't know if I ever saw him make a play like that, where he really went up and made – a catch over a defender. There might have been one, maybe two, where I saw him in the end zone, but I didn't feel like it was a play where he really went out and got, like, out jumped the defender or made that play happen. But really one more with a play where he, you could replace him with any of the other wide receivers on that team and they would have made the same play, if that makes sense. His injury, there's been, and this is more of a gut feeling here, doesn't have a long injury history, doesn't have, like, he's not one of these guys with, like, big medical red flags, but I saw Henry Ruggs be that guy that limped over to the sideline, got something checked out by the trainers, and would return. And to me, that sort of stuff's scary, because that's like, are you playing through stuff? Are you the kind of guy that's always going to have that nagging injury? Like, that's a little bit concerning, especially for a smaller wide receiver. And then the route running, this is one I think, this is just to give you a look inside kind of my formula, so to speak. This is something that is pretty much one of the most important things that I rate on is the for transitioning from college game to the NFL is the route running ability. It's a hard thing to look at on tape, because a lot of the times you don't get a pull far out enough look to actually see the routes fully develop. But I felt like I saw Henry Ruggs run a lot of speed routes, the drags across the middle, the streaks, the fades, you know, the deep posts. And that might have worked in the NCAA, but I am not convinced that it will work in the NFL. And I would like to see him run those routes a little tighter. You hear scouts talk about, you know, rounding off your routes. And that's what Henry Ruggs does. He has a lot of speed and he uses it, but I think he's winning with speed versus winning with agility of his feet versus winning with quick cuts. And I think that he will be that guy that I think the way he profiles and projects in the NFL is a guy that's that 40, 50 catch kind of guy, not going to be a volume guy, who's going to end up catching a few deep balls, some long ones where he gets past the defender, the coverage breaks down, where he's going to rack up a lot of yards on a very few plays. He's going to be like a DeSean Jackson, you know, where DeSean was a guy that would always, at the end of the year, would have a pretty good statistical season. But week in and week out, he was going to be a boomer bust. And I think that's what Henry Ruggs will end up being for Oakland in the long run. Now, there's a lot of targets available. They don't really have a lot at the wide receiver position. Tyrell had a pretty good year last year. We saw him flash at times. Obviously, they had a need there. I would say that I was actually more excited and had him ranked higher was Bryan Edwards from South Carolina, who is on the same team. I think Bryan Edwards is the number, it will be 2 years from now, I think Bryan Edwards is the number one wide receiver for the Oakland Raiders. And I think Henry Ruggs is playing the slot or the other outside guy or the guy that takes the top off the defense, like a Brandon Cooks. That was a lot, but that was those are sort of my unbottled thoughts around Henry Ruggs and kind of the position he landed in.
Oh, that was fantastic. I was mesmerized by that one. There was only one thing I wanted to add to that was how is he going to transition? Because he's got the bullseye on him right now as the number one receiver. And he was never the number one receiver at Alabama. He might have been the number three. And so how is he going to do against like the Patrick Petersons of the world? I'm trying to think, Chris Harris was one of the top DBs in the AFC West.
Yeah.
So how is he going to do against guys like that? And are those guys going to, you know, dress him down early on in his career? And it's going to take a couple years. And then, you know, I people were comparing him so much to Tyreek Hill, and I looked at Tyreek Hill's rookie year and it was pretty pedestrian. So, it wasn't until the second year that he really exploded. So that's why I'm kind of like, considering the situation, he's down a little bit on the pecking order as far as receivers. I want to keep an eye on him just because he could have those boom weeks like you're talking about with DeSean Jackson. But that was fantastic. And, his teammate, Jerry Jeudy, went number 15 overall to the Broncos You talked about route running. He's got that reputation for being a great route runner. What can you give me your analysis?
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, Ruggs, I would say, was the third best wide receiver on his own team, which is tough. It's a tough position for him to be in. It's a tough, you know, and it's a little unfair to him because of guys like Judy who are, this was, I think, our conversation last week where we were talking about quarterbacks. We were talking about Tua, and I mentioned I passed on Tua because I was really excited about another prospect. Jerry Judy was that prospect. Oh. I took Jerry and I traded for Jerry. I traded the farm to get Jerry. I think so highly of Jerry Judy. I think he's going to be such a rock star in Denver. I think he's going to have a little bit of a issue where he's going to have to acclimate. That's the other thing I think people kind of overlook when it comes to rookies moving into the NFL is, hey man, I want you to uproot your life and go figure out how to live in a new city in 6 months. And by the way, learn how to play professional football at the NFL level. You know, like not even they're drafted in May and then they're playing in September. Like there's a lot to kind of get through in those moments. But anyway, putting that aside, Jerry Judy is a fantastic wide receiver. The thing that made me salivate about him was two things. You look at, you watch, and this is another conversation for another day, but the Instagram effect of the way that these players are viewed in the fantasy community and professional community, whether they're rookies or whether they're established veterans, you look at the things he does on a football field, and a lot of it's this, you know, this phone cam kind of stuff. And it's stuff that is a special, special talent. The cuts that he makes, the way that he can jab with his toe and then shoot off in the other direction and be 3 feet away from somebody before they even really start moving in that direction is God-given talent. And there was an article that I read about Jerry Judy that I think came out a couple, maybe even a year ago, that was talking about him. And one of the things that he mentioned was that NFL wide receivers would DM him on Instagram to ask him how he ran that route. NFL. Wow. And his quote was, I'm trying to get where y'all are and y'all hitting me up to be like, ask what I'm doing. And like, I just can't believe that. And it's true, but he really does that just if you go and you watch his, maybe not his game tape, it's harder to see in his game tape, but you watch some of the videos and his workouts and you see how quickly he can move. I just saw one the other day where he's literally making guys like fall over, like, he, you know, and who knows who these guys are. Maybe they're not NFL DBs. There's competition questions, but the fact that he's just twisting people up like this. But he's also got the top end speed. He's also a prototypical size for wide receiver, 6'1", 193. I also think he's going to a team that's on the rise and has a ton of potential. I really liked what Drew Lock did last year. Drew Lock showed that he could throw the ball. You go back and watch what he did in Mizzou. He liked to air it out deep. And that's when like he was really, really good at that. He probably got away with some of those last year. But it's really exciting when you start to see, think about Courtland Sutton as the number one, Jerry Judy on the other side of the field. And again, route running being so important to the NFL because that tells me he can play outside. He can run the full route tree. He's not going to have to stick to a limited tree. They're not going to have to put him in the slot where he can get the advantage of maybe working on a linebacker or a tight end. They'll probably move him around in order to do that. But Jerry can play from the outside from day one. And then they also have Hamler who can go into the slot and be that speed guy. That is, and then not to mention, oh, by the way, they have Noah Fant at tight end who was a first round pick. And then they have, oh, by the way, they just drafted another tight end who played with Locke back at Mizzou, who was running a 4.4 or 4.5. That offense could be sensational once they get everything put together and they start kind of getting the everything figured out. Now, with everything that's been going on this year, there's some, you know, maybe there's some doubts about how quickly rookies could pick things up. But Jerry, I think, is fantastic. I think he's going to – I was shocked that he went to the he dropped all the way to Denver. I was – I couldn't imagine how happy that John Elway was when he found that. He's like, oh, I just got my quarterback a number one wide receiver for the next, you know, decade. Jerry can do all those quick moves, but he also was beating people deep. You look back at the and when I first watched the tape on him, I was like, oh, like it's just Alabama just outclassing everybody, right? Because he's so wide open. But it took me seeing the Instagram videos, it took me seeing the workouts to understand that he wasn't so wide open because of the concept. He was just that wide open because he's just that much better than the guy covering him. He had 3 feet, 4 feet, maybe even 4 or 5 yards sometimes, it seemed like, between him and the guy that was closest to him. And so Bama's picking up these 20, 30-yard gains, and he's making it look easy. But then Jerry can also go over the top. He can also catch that over-the-shoulder ball. I think he can do it all. I think he was the best wide receiver in this class. I had him rated very, very highly, and I think he's going to be an absolute stud in the NFL and worth drafting this year as far as fantasy purposes go.
You know, and one of the things that I saw about him that was kind of interesting to me was I think a lot of he's been friends with Calvin Ridley for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that they, you know, I think Ridley is 2 years older than him, 2 or 3 years older than him. And I go back to Ridley having a very similar reputation coming out of Bama, and Ridley, you know, blew up for 10 touchdowns his rookie year. And that's what's got me thinking. I mean, Drew Locke is at this point is not Matt Ryan as of a couple years ago, but he's got the thing where Cortland Sutton's going to get the number one DB on the other side. And so Judy is going to get, is definitely going to get some, not going to get the top notch DB. So I think that's where he's going to go to town. That's where he's a guy to keep an eye on. And again, the pass defenses, I look a lot of times at the AFC, the Raiders don't have a very good pass defense. The Chargers do. The Chiefs had a decent one last year. People ran on them a little bit more, but definitely not like, you know, you don't have Stephon Gilmore in the AFC West or Jalen Ramsey. So that's where I think that he's going to be able to blow up that first year. He's one of the guys that I have, that I'm really keeping an eye on for this year. And I'm with you. I've got him ahead of Ruggs on this going into this season for redraft. Absolutely. You know, the next guy up, a lot of people didn't expect the Cowboys to take CeeDee Lamb where they did. And what were some of the things? And I know you when you were talking about the next two guys, I imagine CeeDee Lamb was someone you were very high on.
Yeah, I mean, CD did a lot of things really well at Oklahoma. And at first, I mean, from a production standpoint, way up there, just his ability, a lot of the stats that I saw kind of going into the draft were his yards after catch ability. I think that might be a little overstated, but I think he's still like a very good yards after the catch guy. I think some of it works really well in an offense that I'm really excited about. I'm blanking on the offensive coordinator's name down there. Kellen Moore. He's a lefty quarterback who played at Boise State. I think he was the guy who did the Statue of Liberty play against Oklahoma, ironically enough. But CD and him, I think, are going to be just awesome, because I think when you have Gallup on, again, sort of similar to what we were talking about with Denver, when you have Gallup on one side, when you have Amari on the other side, and then you can move CD around to wherever the mismatch is. And then, well, by the way, you got to worry about the guy in the backfield too, Ezekiel Elliott, carrying the ball, 20, 25 down times a game and ramming it down your throat. It opens up a lot of opportunities. And the same sort of dynamic that you were just talking about where, Jerry's going to be able to line up on the number two guy. CD very well could end up being the guy who's on a safety or on, again, like the nickel corner who's coming out in that package, or something, or maybe even something else. And so I think the advantage to CD is that he's in college, he moved around in the formation all the time. And so he did all these really interesting kind of dynamic plays. And I think that he'll be able to transition that to who I think is the next bright young mind in the NFL, and probably will, if things go really well this year, he could very well be in line for a head coaching gig in the next couple of years, and Kellen Moore. So I like CD. The speed is very, is very real. He's got like that kind of like wiry frame. So I'd like to see him, you know, over the first year or two, like get into an NFL strength and conditioning program, add a little bulk, but I think he's going to be a really good one. Hard to think of a comp for him. I would like to see him in the slot, not outside. I think that is where he's going to shine. My knock on him was that I don't see him play outside in the NFL right off the bat. The way that the offense ran in Oklahoma, the spread concepts, the movement, the pre-snap movement, all of that was much better suited for a slot role. And so I think he ended up in a really good landing spot. As far as his draftability and what he'll produce this year, I think he's got to be on rosters. I don't know where you take him, but like again, Michael Gallup, we talked the other day about guys who haven't proven that they can do it over time. Michael Gallup had a great year last year, but he only did that for that year. He's had some injury history. And again, if one injury away and he is a very significant part of that, CD becomes a very significant part of that offense already, and he could be in line for 100, 120 targets, in which case, you know, you could see him put up some of the numbers or close, maybe not the yardage and the touchdowns he put up in college, but the, you know, 60 receptions, you know, 700-800 yards, stuff that's effective for fantasy. It's not going to win you your league more than likely. Wide receiver is a very difficult position to transition to the NFL and have like a gangbusters first year. That's like really, really effective. I think some of the top guys have been in recent memory have been, in Jacksonville and in, you know, Mari's like first year in Oakland, 700 yards, 5 touchdowns, right, stuff like that, which is again, kind of hard to predict when you're not the number one. It's like, what week do you play? I mean, so you gotta be a little bit lucky there. But, I think CD's worth drafting. I think in a redraft league, I think as soon as he gets, that comfort on outside and he can step into that number two, or if Amari were to move on or to be injured. Amari, by the way, guy that gets had some injury history over the last 2 years, and
absolutely,
I personally dealt with it a couple of years ago, and it was so frustrating because he was such a good player when he played. But you know, I think he's a guy that you definitely got to scoop up in drafts this year, if you especially as that fourth or fifth wide receiver.
Yeah, he's got special talent. I mean, I like CeeDee Lamb a lot coming out of, and it's such a high flying offense, and he's always playing with it. It always seems to, I mean, he's played with the number one pick in the NFL draft his first 2 years. So just a great talent. I think you nailed it talking about him needing to gain a little weight, get a little stronger. Maybe that was a little bit something. Marquise Brown kind of had that a little bit. So, but you're right. I mean, this is such a great offense. He's not going to see the top DB. He's never going to see double coverage. So it's, you know, it's, he's someone to really keep an eye on, I think, for the second half of the season, kind of like how DK Metcalf and AJ Brown and Debo Samuel, those guys started really show out and flash some more in the second half of the rookie season. And then maybe, you know, hit the ground running. I've heard some people talk about the fact that by his second or third year, he might take over for Amari Cooper as the number one receiver on this team if he really lives up to all the talent that he has. And I think Chris Sims had him rated as his number one receiver going into the draft. So really, really says something.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the next guy in the draft. Jalen Reagor went number 21 to the Eagles. Kind of a surprise. I think the Eagles expected that they were going to get CeeDee Lamb. What's kind of your outlook for him? A little more wide open for him as far as a position.
Yeah, that was going to be the first thing. As far as the guys who step into positions, I'd say Reagor and then T. Higgins are probably the two guys I would say that have an opportunity from day one to kind of maybe be a primary target, potentially. Jalen is, you know, with we all know how that offense ended the year, where they were running, you know, two or three tight ends and they just there was no one healthy. They couldn't do anything. But as far as – so the opportunity is fantastic in Philly. He's got a great quarterback. He's got a great offensive line to kind of to go with it. They've got a lot, and you got Miles Sanders in the backfield. You got the guy I also like is a kind of a the gadget guy, Boston Scott, like they've got options and ways to kind of like pick you apart. I think Jalen's in a really good spot. I think he played now as far as him as a prospect. I think he's a great prospect. One of the things that I saw him do, and at 5'11", 206, he's not all that far removed from Henry Ruggs. I saw Jalen go and make the jump play. I saw him go make the vertical play. But I also saw him make the yards after the catch. He did it both. And even at his size, reminds me of Steve Smith, a guy who, despite his smaller size, played much bigger. He was able to go up and get balls. He competed for balls. He wasn't one of those guys that, and they're not to say there's anything wrong with this, but one of those speed guys who would get down the field, then if the ball was misthrown, he'd be like, kind of peel off or whatnot.
Right.
He's going to do everything he can to go get it. But his yards after the catch ability, his pure speed, he was on a very bad team at TCU his last year. And you saw it in the numbers. I think you look at his junior year numbers and you would have expected much better numbers out of his senior year. I mean, you look at the stats here, 43 receptions, 611 yards, 5 touchdowns. That junior year is, I think, the most relevant year for him. And I think that what you saw is a guy who could run after the catch, who could catch a screen, who could catch a or maybe take an end around and do something with it. A guy that could play the deep ball and can go and get it for you and potentially even go get it over a guy that might even be a little bigger than him. And a guy who ran crisper routes than I saw from Ruggs. So I think Rieger has potential to be a steal this year, not only for the Eagles in the NFL sense, but also for you as a fantasy manager if you happen to get him in some of the later rounds, because there's going to be a lot of wide receivers that go off the board ahead of him. But he very well may be the number one receiver come the end of the year for as far as the Eagles are concerned.
Hey, you look at him, it's like, I mean, Alshon Jeffrey, I would be surprised if he plays a game this season. Just starting, it sounds like his injury is more serious than it really is. DeSean Jackson, I mean, he played what, 2 or 3 games last year, so you don't know if he's and really that's it. There's a bunch of other guys. They definitely have the good tight ends, and I like Sanders out of the catching balls out of backfield, but you need that guy on the outside. You need that guy on the outside to make the offense go. That's why I think they might actually try and force the issue with him. And it could be a trial by fire where maybe he struggles early, but then gets it, after a few games. So it's just the opportunity with him.
Yeah.
And
He's a credible athlete. So when he's got that opportunity, like you'd expect something. Here's just a fun thought. Like, rather going back to that 2 tight end offense, imagine a trips formation with Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert out on the right. And then also with them happens to be Jalen Reagor. You do a quick screen to Reagor and you have those two big guys out there blocking on quarterbacks. Like, take that all day. It's gotta get you 10 yards.
He's gonna fly. Oh man, I hadn't even thought about that one, but that's amazing. That's amazing to think that.
It'd be a pretty cool play. So I love Rieger. He was very high. He was in my top 3 with CD and Judy. Next kind of guy. I think he's in a, definitely as far as opportunity is concerned, he's in a fantastic spot. In fact, as far as opportunities are concerned, I had him ranked up there with Judy and Higgins. So I think that you can see a lot of good things, a lot of highlights come out of him this year.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. So our next guy, Justin Jefferson, obviously incredible numbers at LSU, definitely Joe Burrow's favorite target. And he's got an opportunity waiting for him. Where did you kind of have him looked
at? Yeah. I had a very interesting journey with Justin Jefferson as a prospect, because I remember watching him in the Oklahoma game when LSU just torched them and he scored, I think it was the 3 touchdown game. And he was just so dominant and just seemed to just do what he wanted. He was playing at will really over these defenders. And he was just, I remember watching and be like, I want that guy on my football team. And I was very, very high on him. And as I started to look through the tape, I wouldn't say I soured on him so much, but other guys, I think, kind of took precedence, the Judy's like we talked about. But Jefferson does a lot of things really well. He seems to be that guy who has the sticky hands. Like on that third down, you're going to force it into a tight window and he's going to twist his body and he's just going to make sure he makes that catch. Because then you, when you need it, I think he's going to do that really, really well. And so I like him in a place like Minnesota where he doesn't have to be the number one and he can do those sort of things, be asked to, you know, maybe run the drag across the middle, run the end, just get that first down and be a guy that moves the chains versus a guy who goes and is going to blow off the top off the defense and you know, going to be a real burner and really focus downfield. My concern, I think, from a fantasy perspective with a guy like Justin Jefferson and really in general with the Vikings is coaching. Stefanski going to the Cleveland Browns and you have a new offensive coordinator coming in. It's always hard to predict exactly what's going to happen there. I'm a lot more comfortable drafting guys in situations with continuity at the head coaching and offensive coordinator positions than guys where stuff had switched around like that. And to that point, Stefanski was a guy who liked to have two tight ends on the field. He liked to run the ball. He was like running very heavily with Dalvin Cook. They weren't really a passing offense all that much. Especially I think for the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season, I think that they may have only had, they were averaging like, you know, 25 pass attempts a game. But he was a guy that it was clear. I want to line it up. I want to have my tight end, my guys on the field. I want to run it with Dalvin Cook. If that's the strategy, Justin Jefferson's in a really bad spot because I don't think that leaves a lot of room left for the number two wide receiver. And I'll add, when I watched Justin in college, he's a slot guy. He's another Henry Ruggs type where his routes weren't super crisp. I didn't see a guy who was doing very complex things with his routes. A lot of drags across the middle, a lot of quick, you know, hitches or quick outs. Again, the guy with the sort of stuff where you're going to stick it on him. You're going to predict when he's going to make his cut and come out of his break. You're going to stick it on him, stick it on his chest. He's going to make the catch. He's going to get you that first down or do a little yards at run after the catch. I don't think that works in the Minnesota offense as I'm seeing it right now, where a lot of people have him slotted to be, you know, the guy on the opposite side from Adam Thielen. And I don't see a lot of slot snaps in a world where they're to have two tight ends and are running Dalvin Cook. Right. They're going to commit to that. Or Madison, for that matter, who showed up in a big way. And they know that running game works. So my big concern with Justin Jefferson is not talent. My big concern is, what does the Vikings offense look like? And is it going to be conducive to him putting up more than 50 catches in year one? And in my opinion, those catches are not going to be the Henry Ruggs 60, 70, 80-yard touchdowns. They're going to be like, you know, the end zone touchdowns or the quick hits, the smaller ones. Justin Jefferson's the kind of guy who should put up his senior year stat line in like 2 or 3 years. 111 receptions, 1,500 yards, 18 touchdowns. A guy who's going to like just catch a ton of balls and just have a ton of volume for you, but is not going to be the guy who is, you know, the Calvin Johnson type who's going to be just like huge average yards per reception.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, I was kind of hopeful, you know, considering the fact that Stephon Diggs left 94 targets behind. But yeah, are those going to be spread around the tight ends? And Dalvin Cook is definitely a threat out of the backfield. And, you know, considering the fact that the Thielen was hurt part of last season, how much of those 94 targets would have gone to him? And yeah. So and the fact, again, Gary Kubiak, it's been a while since he was an OC. So is he going to just double down on the run? Because he's always featured the running back, and they've got a great one in Dalvin Cook. Yeah. He's Jefferson, maybe a guy I keep an eye on after the draft and during the season to see if maybe he gets targeted to maybe stash on the bench if it looks like he becomes relevant. So yeah. I agree with you. I think that was nails as far as what he did, as far as what he's going to do in a year or two. You know, Brandon Ayuk, He was the 25th pick overall, snuck into the first round. What, he's another guy who's got an opportunity at the 49ers. Where did you have him?
Yeah, so this was one that I differed from many in my evaluation of Ayuk. I had him pretty far down my list here. I had guys like CeeDee Lamb, Bryan Edwards, Antonio Gandy-Golden, Michael Pittman, Justin Jefferson all above him, and I was surprised and not surprised to see him go to San Francisco, because I knew they liked him. So in that sense, I was not surprised, but I was surprised that he went ahead of some of the guys, like the next guy on the list, T. Higgins, who we'll talk about in a minute. I was surprised that he went ahead of him in the draft. But so here's the thing. I think from a fit perspective, Ayuk is in a good spot. I think the way that Shanahan likes to run his offense, you know they're going to have a strong run game. You know that he knows how to run an offense. He likes the West Coast style. He likes to give guys the opportunity to move with the ball after they've caught it. So his yards after catch ability is the most notable thing about Ayuk. My concern was that when I watched him on tape, I didn't see the quickness off the snap. I didn't see him separating and really doing a lot of great things in the receiving game at a conference that the Pac-12 that was, you know, Arizona State, maybe not the best team, maybe, you know, suffered a little bit there, but I would have liked to see him do more from that standpoint. But you watched him do the kickoff returns, you watched him do the screen passes, and you saw the vision, you saw how he can turn it on and get to a next level. And you can see how that will be dangerous in the NFL. I would expect him to get some return capability or opportunities there. My concern with Ayuk is, and I think this kind of goes to a core tenet of fantasy football. At the end of the day, it's going to be about touchdowns. When somebody wins, winning or losing any given week is going to be usually about whoever got the touchdowns that week. I'm not so sure that Ayuk is going to be a guy that scores many touchdowns this year. When you get down to the red zone, they've proven they like to punch it in with their backs. They've got a lot of different backs that can do that. Then you got George Kittle, who's arguably the best tight end in the NFL, at least in the consideration of that conversation, who would be a fantastic person to throw the ball off play action when you're not running it. So you have that opportunity. And then you also have a guy who flashed last year, Deebo Samuel, who's the best player on their team when it came to the Super Bowl, when it came to the biggest game of the year. So I would argue that, you know, Ayuk is at best going to be the fourth, maybe fifth option on that team when it comes red zone time. And so I just don't know how many opportunities he's going to get. And I don't know if it's going to happen this year. And so he was drafted as a guy who's going to be a yards after catch demon. I didn't see it on film to that level where he like worth, you know, I thought Rieger would have been a better pick over Ayuk, for example, in that category. But a guy that Shanahan really likes, and you got to trust Shanahan to some degree. He's done it year after year, offense after offense. He gets the job done. But for me, Ayuk is a pass for me. I won't draft him in any of my leagues this year because of those reasons that I mentioned. And he didn't seem to have some of the things that I would want him to have. And that includes like getting off press coverage. Was he strong at the point of attack? Things like that. So I think Ayuk could be a nice piece. I think he could potentially flash. But my two cents on Ayuk as a prospect in general is that this was a reach, and I will also put him similar to Henry Ruggs, where there's a category of guys who run really fast 40s and then get drafted in the first round and don't work out. Ayuk was that guy that nobody knew his name before April, and then came out of nowhere. All the draft people, he went to the post-draft pre-draft process, went to the Senior Bowl, had a good game, you know, went to the workouts and had the interviews, and people really liked the kid, and his stock shot up at the very end, and that's where he ended up in the first round. But if the draft had happened in February or January, the guy would have been a third or fourth round pick. And so I'm a little concerned when I see stuff like that, where guys just go on this really hot tear right before the draft and people get really hyped up. So I like him more in year two than in year one, or maybe you're kind of a post-hype coming out of the draft, if that's possible, right? So that's my take on Ayuk. But I will say, going to a great team, that obviously helps. And Shanahan's a good coordinator. I just wasn't super impressed with him as a prospect.
You know, it's funny. I looked at him, and I, you know, obviously the same college, Arizona State, as N'Keal Harry the year before. And I saw a lot of the similar traits. And Harry just didn't really do it. And obviously he battled some injuries, and it just kind of had me thinking, okay, is this guy going to get force fed early if Deebo Samuel is not 100% to start the season? Cause I think the optimistic time frame for him to be healthy is right around the first game of the season. Yeah. So, the lesser is like 6 weeks later. So if Deebo Samuel is not healthy right off the bat, then is IU going to get force fed the ball, and it's going to be sink or swim at that point. Yeah. And so it's one of those things where you worry that he's gonna sink because he's just not ready. And, you know, so maybe that's for me is the big worry part. I will say that San Francisco has a very soft schedule at the beginning of the season. So like the first six games are against fairly like bottom half pass defenses from last year. So there is the possibility to get, he could get fat early. I mean, assuming those pass defenses don't take a dramatic step up, but yeah, that one, if he doesn't blow up in the first half of the season, he might just be one of those guys that you're keeping an eye on in the second year and hope that second or third year that he has that jump up. But yeah, I think he will get that opportunity early on. But again, if Samuel's out, I think he's the number two option. Because Kittle's just a monster.
Totally. And it just while you were doing that, I wanted to check my facts before I said something here. But my read, at least on the San Francisco offense last year, we already talked about how they like to run the ball. Only one player had over 100 targets last year. That was George Kittle. So I didn't see an offense that seemed conducive to like number one wide receiver kind of roles. You know, they like to spread it around. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of guys contribute. Emmanuel Sanders, Kendrick Bourne was a nice young receiver for them who could maybe, you know, step up and steal some targets. But they only threw the ball 467 times last year. That's pretty darn low as far as the today's NFL is concerned. And so my other, you know, even in that scenario, which I think you're absolutely right, you know, and the Deebo is a question mark going into the beginning of the season. But even in that scenario where he does get that, Deebo only had 57 catches last year as their quote unquote number one wide receiver. So it's, I don't know if the volume's there, I guess, in addition, but you know, offensives evolve, they change, they go and move in year in and year out. So it'll be an interesting one to watch, and I'll definitely look forward to listening back on this episode and hearing where we landed.
I know. I think Halloween is kind of like that line of demarcation where we just kind of be like, okay, were we right? Was it right? So yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah, you'll be in a definitely a different climate at that point. We can talk about that later, but well, next guy, a guy near and dear to your heart, your alma mater, T. Higgins.
Woo. Oh, I do have some love for T, and he, I rated him pretty well. Probably heart a little higher than I should have, but here, what T does really, really well is catch the ball, which sounds stupid, but it's true. You know, the guy didn't run, he doesn't run a 4.440. He ran like a 4.5, maybe even at sometimes, you know, 4.6. And I think people kind of looked at that going into the draft and it knocked his stock. They said, oh, he's not capable of winning at the NFL level. He's just bigger than all of these guys. And that's, to be honest, that's a potential outcome of his draft story, or his story as a player, is that he was a guy that was just better than the guys he was playing a lot of the time, and bigger, and was able to succeed with a great quarterback who was able to put the ball in a place where he could go up and get it. But as that's a, in today's NFL, that ability to go get the ball is rare, and it is exceptionally effective. You look at guys like Calvin Johnson, you look at guys like Kenny Golladay, you look at guys like Mike Evans. These are guys who can go and get it and can make the catch, make hands catches, which is so important. And there are a couple of plays that I could probably send you for the show notes or something that kind of go have people go look at, where, you know, Higgins is outstretched, full body, one toe on the sideline, and is able to reach out and grab a ball that's, you know, a yard, almost a full yard or two outside, out of bounds, that he's able to go and reel in. And it's that catch radius that I think is going, not only the ability to go up, but that catch radius that is going to make him so damn effective in the NFL. And he has proven and shown time and time again at the college level that he has the body awareness, the spatial awareness to do the toe taps, to do the fade and be able to get that one foot in. You're going to see, and with a guy like Burrow throwing in the ball, oof, that is going to be fun to watch, because when they get in that red zone, you start seeing him throw up those back corner fades to T. Higgins, or that front pylon throw, and you start seeing this guy who's a big dude, 6'4", be able to reach all the way out. And like, you can, the guy Burrow will be able to throw it like the cameraman or the lineman, and like, he'll be able to go get it. And so I think that, you know, T, I think, is going to be successful in the NFL because of those reasons. I don't think he has to be the fastest guy, but he can be a guy that's on the outside who works the intermediate to deeper part of the field and gives his quarterback a big target to go after with those throws. And so I think T will be successful. You know, he is technically the third guy on the depth chart right now. He's got to prove himself. He's maybe even the fourth if you're. I'm not high on John Ross. I guess he would kind of go in the Henry right. Ruggs school of guys that run real good but don't catch the football so good. And T is going to be kind of the opposite of that. So I think T is going to be the guy that's going to be probably the number three. They'll probably put Tyler Boyd in the slot and have T be outside and have AJ Green be outside. He does get to learn from a great veteran, probably a Hall of Fame wide receiver at the end of the day. And he's also hungry. He's pissed he's not in that first round. That guy should have been a, you know, in any other draft class, he's a top two, top three wide receiver. And now he's got a chip on his shoulder, something to play for. So I think he's going to do extremely well in Cincinnati. I think he's going to have a great career. I think he has a potential because of the touchdown potential, because of the potential connection with Burrow, that I think he has an opportunity to be an impact player. But I do think, to your point on some of these other guys, that might not happen until week 8 or week 9, where we really see the game slow down for him and he get the opportunities to go and the opportunities to be a productive player week in and week out.
When I look at him, the thing that sticks out to me is the 6'4". And that is such a rare talent.
Yeah.
when it comes to wide receivers, and you know, when I think about him, I'm like, and he's fast, and I was always impressed with him whenever he was playing. I mean, I know Trevor Lawrence is a fantastic quarterback, but he always had great talent around him, and he always rose above that talent and played well against great defenses, great defenders. Yeah. So that to me says a lot, because he's going to be going up against some tough defenses in the AFC North. But the thing is, I don't think anybody's going to be as big as him. And I think when he really grows into his body, he's going to be just a spectacular talent, and I think he's going to outperform some of the guys who got picked ahead of him in this draft, especially as he grows with Joe Burrow. It's kind of interesting, because Burrow is much more talented than Andy Dalton, and it is kind of interesting that, like, when AJ Green and Andy Dalton came into the league at the same time, they formed that incredible bond, and AJ Green had some fantastic years ahead of him. So T. Higgins is that kind of talent, and Joe Burrow I think it's going to be a great connection, and I really think starting in 2021, they're going to be an incredible stack when it comes to, you know, drafts, DFS. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch those guys.
Absolutely. And one last thing on T really quick, because you brought this, we brought this up when we had CD, and I want to be fair. T's a little scrawny. He's a little wiry. You know, that those 216 pounds are stretched out over that 6'4". So it'll be exciting to see, you know, to your point, what does he look like in 2021 with a year under his belt and a little opportunity to grow? He's also a very young wide receiver too. So, I think you're spot on. I think he's going to be a great player.
Well, we got one last guy, unless there's somebody else you want to add afterward, but Michael Pittman Jr. I mean, I got to see him a lot, and just, I mean, yeah, another big receiver who really goes, knows how to fight for the ball. And plus he went to high school about 4 miles from me. So, tell me, what was your scouting report on him?
Oh, I'm a huge Michael Pittman fan. I scouted him pretty early in my process, and Pittman, you know, at the end of the day, didn't end up in my like top five or six wide receivers. And that's really less of a knock on Pittman and more of just attesting to the quality of the draft class here. I think Pittman, to your point, as you just said, he does go get the ball. He does that really well. I think, how do I say this? I think Pittman was a little hamstrung by the quarterback issues at USC at times. Mm. You see, you know, they had some changes, started out here, kind of ended up over there. I saw him make some plays that he actually didn't get credit for, but were kind of similar to T. Higgins, where he was able to toe tap. He was able to go and work the sideline. I think that the sidelines is something he probably does, is probably where he shines the most. Those 10, 12 yard out routes, the hitches, he's not going to be a guy that's going to, he's not fast enough, or he's not really going to like be a yards after the catch guy. Maybe he can, you know, get that stiff arm, get downfield, but he doesn't have like the 4.4 speed where he's just going to go run through everyone and score a touchdown. But he is the kind of guy who's big. He's got nice big hands. He's going to be reliable, and he's going to be able to go out, run that hitch route, run that out route, get you the first down. But to your point, even though he's a bigger guy and it might take him a little second to get up to speed, I saw him have a very, very, very successful in that vertical game. And in fact, he's one of two people that I gave top marks in that vertical game. The other one we haven't had a chance to talk about yet, but I think Pittman is a great prospect. He landed in a, I would say, near ideal situation where T.Y. has always been the de facto number one, but he's a slot guy. And they've never had those guys on the outside to really complement him and really be those red zone threats. So I think Pittman's going to be in a great spot to pick up some touchdowns and some looks, targets in the red zone. And then and also be that guy who could be a chain mover, that guy who's might average, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12 yards per catch. When you're watching the box score, you're watching the ESPN app, and it's going to say, you know, Rivers to Pittman for 12 yards kind of stuff. I think he's going to have a nice long career there. And I think he landed in a good spot. He got top marks as far as the NFL opportunity, which is one of the key factors I kind of rated and where I wanted him to go. I think both short-term and long-term, he's in a great spot with Indianapolis. We already talked about my love of Frank Reich and how I think he reinvents the game on the offensive side. So I think Pittman, I was really high at Pittman. I was bummed I didn't get him in my draft. And it was one other guy, and then it was me. And then the two guys on the board were Pittman and Higgins. And so I was like, I'm going to be happy either way, but I was really happy to get Higgins at the end of the day.
Oh, so somebody grabbed Pittman over Higgins.
Someone took Pittman over Higgins, and I applauded him for that decision, because I do think Pittman is going to be a great wide receiver worth drafting this year in the later rounds of your draft, and definitely worth picking up in a dynasty format. The only question mark there is kind of coming in 2021, 2022, who's the guy calling the plays or the signal caller rather, you know, in Indianapolis, because it's not going to be Phil Rivers forever. And I would argue that maybe Phil doesn't even make it through this year is a pretty open possibility. Being that age and playing on turf and playing indoors, I think that could be a pretty brutal scenario potentially. So, we'll see, but I think I love Pittman, and I'm glad you got a chance to like watch him at USC, and so you know the sort of things I'm talking about.
No, absolutely, absolutely, and you know, I really think there's a physicality to the way he plays that I think comes from the genes. His dad was a running back, so I think there's a little bit of that came through. So that's why I think he's a great prospect, and you know, when you talked about the opportunity, I mean, I like the offense that he's going into just because of the fact that that there's not going to be Philip Rivers, as immobile as he is, he's not going to get sacked a lot because that offensive line is just Fort Knox. They're going to keep guys out. So I think that's that, just a lot of things are pointing up for him. Well, those are the guys that I talked about. Is there anybody that you wanted to keep an eye on?
I would love to just highlight a few people for listeners, and this might not be these guys. Maybe you add on your watch list on Yahoo, and maybe they have some fantasy impact this year. Maybe they don't, but I think long term, or just generally as a football fan, guys to be aware of. Kind of going top to bottom as of kind of picking from my rankings here. The first is Chase Claypool, the wide receiver out of Notre Dame, who went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers have really been kind of lacking that. Plaxico Burress, big-bodied kind of wide receiver for a while. They've got some great guys. Obviously, Juju's there. Juju is well-documented to have run his best seasons out of the slot. So Chase coming in, potentially being able to take one of those outside spots, lets him maybe slide back into where he's most natural. And Chase, I mentioned Michael got the top marks on the vertical game. Chase was the other guy. Chase was a guy, I saw him make more spectacular and noteworthy catches than any other prospect I looked at this year. He really had a knack for I've said this a lot, but going up and getting the ball, but doing it, just going and making just really sensational catches. And he does it on top of a frame that is, oh my God, so incredible. This was a stat that I read pre-draft, post-draft analysis, something, I think it was on ESPN. I mean, two players in like the common draft era, or at least the last 20, 25 years, who are 230 pounds and run a 4.4 40. There is Chase Claypool and there is Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
And that is all you need to know, really. They call him Mapletron. He's going to be, I think he's going to be a stud. I think there's a little bit of I have a little bit of a concern of like Notre Dame's hasn't really, not a lot of those guys have panned out in the NFL, but I think Chase might finally be it. He's one of those guys, I think was a former basketball player too. I think he's definitely a guy to watch and just be aware of. Cause I think they could have gotten a steal for where they drafted him. Next guy, Tyler Johnson. I really, really liked this guy. When I was watching his tape, he actually kind of reminded me of Chris Godwin and of all places, he ended up in Tampa Bay, and which is horrible. Just to give you an inside look, I rate my NFL opportunity at 1 to 5 on a basic schedule. He's the only guy that got a 1 because now you're behind Mike Evans and now you're behind that. No, by the way, now Gronk, since I've had this, now Gronk's there. It sucks for him because he's not going to be a fantasy asset this year anytime soon, barring a injury, God forbid. But I think Tyler Johnson was a lot of first round hype for him going into the year. And he had a great year with a Minnesota team that surprised a lot of people. But I actually really liked his game. And I felt he has a nice size speed combination. I talked a little earlier. I mentioned Bryan Edwards. Bryan Edwards out of South Carolina is very much the Alshon Jeffrey comps go beyond the fact that they both played there. He is a guy who I liked. I liked his footwork. I liked his route running, and it wasn't so much that he could run a full route tree, but what I do like about him at his size was his ability to work those intermediate or those double moves, you know, the fake the post, then you hit the corner, those sort of things. I saw him do really well. One of the only concerns with Edwards is he did have a pretty significant injury. So you now the Alshon Jeffrey comps really become real. So a little concern there. But I think Oakland got a steal for where they drafted him, and there's definitely a need there. There's definitely targets. He could be a guy that pops later in the year. or surprises some people. And then I think the last one I'll throw out here is Antonio Gandy-Golden, who came out of a small school at Liberty, but landed in a good spot, and a spot that just got better because Kelvin Harmon, who was flashing at the end of the last year and was showing some chemistry with Dwayne Haskins and was kind of their big physical, big-bodied receiver, got hurt. And so now this young rookie has an opportunity, who is a big-bodied, physical wide receiver, who's like a big-sized guy, might have an opportunity that he otherwise wouldn't have. And so I was originally thinking he would end up riding the bench and get, you know, maybe get some snaps toward the end of the year, start to flash when they wanted to kind of, you know, get him and Haskins out there. But I think that may have just forced the issue. And so he may be a guy that maybe goes undrafted in your league, that might be worth taking a look at in Washington. And I'll just add to that I'm on the Haskins hype train big time in Washington, D.C. this year. Which is that's a whole nother conversation for another day. But some ones for you and the familia to keep an eye on over the coming weeks.
I always love quarterbacks in their second year, as I talked about before. But and a lot of people were really just, you know, talking down Haskins. I'm like, well, go ahead, talk him down, because I'm gonna try and get Terry McLaurin wherever I can, and I'm gonna keep an eye on Haskins, especially in two QB leagues, because in the super flex, because I think he's a guy that's gonna come out of nowhere. And you know, their second, you know, their defense is rebuilding, so I think they're gonna be in some shootouts, man.
Absolutely.
But oh man,
and just to add to that, really quick before we sign off. To that point on Haskins, Urban Meyer, coach Haskins at OSU, was recently on a radio show, TV show, was being interviewed and being asked about some of the top quarterbacks in the NFL and Patrick Mahomes, and he said that the interviewer asked him if he had ever seen somebody who the quarterback when he was recruiting them that was like, from the minute he saw them, just got super excited and was like, we got to go get that guy. And his answer was Dwayne Haskins. That he watched him throw for 3 or 4 hours, and the best quarterback he ever recruited was Dwayne Haskins. So that's a pretty big stamp of approval there. And so I think we should all be very excited to see what he can do this year. Although it is the Washington football team now, so who knows where they'll end up.
Well, you know what? They got Rivera. Maybe he's going to change some things. And Scott Turner apparently did some really, you know, he did some really good things with not very good quarterbacks at Carolina when he got hold of the offense last year. So who knows? Maybe yeah. There's going to be just enough talent to make it interesting. Oh man. Oh, Jordan, this is always so fun, man. I always love getting down to the nitty gritty with, you know, talking football.
Thank you so much for having me on. This is so fun. To your point, I love chopping up some football, and it's always great to do it with a good friend. And it's nice to see that circle growing with the familia and getting bigger and bigger every day. And so, thank you so much for having me on. This is a blast.
Oh man, and I can't wait to see how much Spanish you learn in España. España. Oh man. Well, my brother, thank you again. Everybody, familia, community, again, keep an eye on us on our social media channels, Twitter and Instagram at Familia FFB, and make sure to follow us on our Familia FFB Facebook page. Again, otra vez, everybody, es un placer, as our good friend Jaime Jarrín would say. And everybody, take care, stay healthy, stay safe, and remember, todos somos familia.